Blog Talk Radio.
December 12th, 2011. My name is Tom Riedel. I'm the host for the Writer's Lounge. And before we get into the show today, which is, and I have my notes right here, of course, Roz Morris, Nail Your Novel, My Memories of a Future Life Will Be On. But before we get into that, I'd like to also mention that we had a show scheduled on December 5th. And unfortunately, the author for that show, Neil Tortorella, was unable to be on. I guess he was going to a takeout restaurant and fell down and injured himself. So right before the show was to start. So we hope that Neil is going to recover, and we will be bringing him back on at another point in time here on the Writer's Lounge. And his book, Starting Your Career as a Freelance Web Designer, we will have on at a later date. So stay tuned for that if you're going to tune in for Neil. He will be back. We just have to reschedule. Okay, and this is where we talk about the Writer's Lounge and where you can find us on the web. You can find the Writer's Lounge blog at tomriedel.com/blog, and you will find the written reviews of all of the author's books on that site. So make sure you get on over there and have a look and see what's on there right now. So, also, of course, if you're in the Blog Talk Radio site, you can go there and find us on a link to Facebook. There's a Facebook link for you at the Blog Talk Radio site for the Writer's Lounge. Make sure you go ahead and do that. We're starting to pick up a lot of numbers there, a lot of likes for that page. So I hope that you will also go there and like our page and keep in contact with what's going on with the show. You, of course, can always contact us at twl11@yahoo.com. That's our email, twl11@yahoo.com. And also, I would like to announce that upcoming show here on December 19th, we have a special show set up for you. It's the Christmas Terror Tales book, and it was written by Kevin Folliard, and hopefully we can get a hold of Kevin and make sure that we set that up for next week. We're doing three shows this month in December, so that's an extra treat for you. Also, big announcement. I will be announcing a new co-host here on the Writer's Lounge starting here in the next couple of weeks. We will make the announcement. The new show co-host, very excited to say that this person has had online radio experience. And also, she is very much involved in the writing craft, and she'll bring with her some wonderful insights to what it means to be a writer and an author. I'll look for her to join us as a full-time co-host in January, as I said, and we'll be making that announcement here, I think, probably within the next two shows. So that's something I'm going to keep secret for now, and then when we're ready to announce, you'll be here, and hopefully she will be here too. So make sure you tune in for that. For today's show, once again, we have Roz Morris on, Nail Your Novel, along with My Memories of a Future Life, two books that she has written. And for caller instructions on this show, there will not be callers on this show, unfortunately, because we interviewed her in October, and that's why we won't have calls. And I believe the interview runs for about 49 minutes. So by the time that interview is over, we'll be pretty much done with the show. This segment, what we normally do is segment number one is writer's topics. And since I'm a little bit challenged with my throat these days, I have a very bad cough. So instead of coughing through writer's topics, I have lined up a gentleman here in Minnesota to do all the talking for you in three segments that I recorded. His name is Garrison Keillor. I'm sure some of you have probably heard about him. He is a humorist writer, and he was attending a Irma Bombeck convention here in 2008, and he had three segments on there, first of which is Stay in Touch with Your Writing, Get Out Among People was the first one. The second one was Writing Different Genres and Formats, Write About Anything, he says. And the last segment that you'll hear coming up is Humor Writing. It talks about being depressed and funny and how it actually helps you to motivate yourself and to do some writing. So that will be our show for today. I will start with Garrison Keillor, and I hope that you will join us next time on December 19th when we will have Kevin Folliard on with Christmas Terror Tales. And so right now, let's go to segment number one with Garrison Keillor, and we'll see you next time around.
I'm astonished by friends of mine who only write poetry, for example, or who only write short stories. Why would anybody live like that? If you write sports, if you write about football, you would still be a better writer for having tried to write a sonnet. You would be a better fiction writer for having done some reporting, and vice versa. And everybody would be helped by writing an honest review of somebody else's book. That's just good literary citizenship. So I don't recommend that you launch into a novel or an enormous book unless you've got a lot of steam behind you, and unless you really have to do it. I don't believe in people wasting their time, but among all of the short forms, I believe in people bouncing around. I'm opposed to obsessive focus of writers. I think every writer ought to, at some point in your life, write about something that's really shameful and embarrassing, even if it's only for your own good, a sort of self-confession. And I think every writer ought to write work that is purely for your own amusement, even if it's scandalous or silly, not worthy of you. I think everybody should have some fun doing, and that's going to take you across borders. People who have the education that I had as an English major are much too intolerant of genre writing, much too intolerant of romance novels, of science fiction, of crime thrillers, and so I believe in people being in people having the freedom of their talent to follow it wherever it might take them. My advice to writers is very simple. It is to get out. Get out more. Don't sit in the house. Go for long walks. Good for you. Writing is an obsessive activity, and it's too easy to get too tied to what you're doing when your deadline is the most serious. That's the most important time to get out of the house and go for a walk, to walk for 2 or 3 miles every day, rapidly if necessary, but to get out and to look at the world. Writing is not narcissism. Writing is about the world that we live in, and when writing loses touch with the beautiful surface of the world, it loses its way. So much writing is about the alienation of a superior intelligence, that is the writer's. That's the writing to avoid. You always want to be in touch with how things look and what people say and what they call their dogs. You always want to be there. Irma Bombeck's strength as a writer was that she knew the names of things. She knew what was in people's homes. She called things by their right name. She got out among people.
Have you ever had a time where you had to write, you know, keep up the humor writing when you were in a time in your life where life really wasn't all that funny and it was really hard to find the humor?
Oh, it's better then. It's much better. If you're really depressed, you can be much funnier. If you're in a good mood, it's very hard. I mean, and what would be the motivation for writing if you're in a good mood? Why would you want to do it?
I'm not talking so much about mood. I'm talking more about circumstance, like when something really bad is happening.
Things bad happen all the time. When you get to be my age.
The books Nail Your Novel and My Memories of a Future Life are written by Roz Morris. The first book, Nail Your Novel, is not a large volume book. If you're buying the printed on paper form of the book, it's only 182 pages, and unlike other resource books on how to write a novel, it won't swell your brain up with a lot of information that you'll forget after you've digested it all. In 10 easy steps, it'll show you how to take that first original idea of writing a novel and see it through to the final product. You'll learn how to do the research, how to organize your time, how to plot and build characters, and you'll also learn how to handle the problems that come up along the way that most writers have to deal with, like writer's block and maintaining that inspiration that pushed you to writing in the first place. Nail Your Novel has presently accumulated 35 reviews on Amazon.com. 34 of those reviews have given it 5 stars, and only one has given it 4 stars. This book is a keeper, and I'll be keeping it next to me while I continue to write my novel. I'm ready to nail my novel with this book from Roz Morris. The other book was released by Roz Morris in September in 4 separate episodes. It is a tale of fiction called My Memories of a Future Life. We've all heard of the intriguing idea of reincarnation, and many of us have read many a novel where reincarnation was the theme, but in My Memories of a Future Life, we're presented with a different idea of reincarnation. If you knew that you would one day be reincarnated, what would you leave in a future person's soul before you died? And could this future incarnated person somehow help you find some of the answers of the complexities of life that you need now? The main character in My Memories of a Future Life is a gifted musician who plays piano. The piano is Carol's life, but her life comes crashing down when an injury causing severe pain in her arms stops her from playing. It is then that a soulmate enters her life. His name is Andrique, and he is from the future, and he may be Carol's incarnation, or he may be just a figment of her imagination. But Andrique's story may be just what Carol needs to go on living. Lou will now read an excerpt from My Memories of a Future Life, and then we'll be back to talk to Roz Morris.
Chapter 1. Within the soundproof walls, the candles knew the truth. This wasn't Nirvana. It was a building in the grimy backlands of Clapham Junction Station. In the yoga studio, all was hushed, but the candle flames stirred to agitated vibration as the train passed. Delicate instruments shivering to an influence none of us could hear or feel. The truth was, I shouldn't be here, lying still on a purple slip of mat in a row of people who looked like they'd all fallen from the sky. Being told by a barefoot girl to empty my mind, to quiet my thoughts, and just be. Quiet was something I'd had too much of in the past weeks. If this were a proper day, I'd be at my Yamaha grand piano sending glorious noise out of its black wing. For hours, I would see only the black and white keys, my reflection in the lacquer black bodywork swaying across the gold lettering, my hands lifting and falling. And today, being the first Monday of the month, I should have been at my tutor's house. That was before the pain. Now, on this first Monday, instead of dancing up a storm of demi-semi-quavers on his Hamburg Steinway, I was lying on a wooden floor on a sticky mat trying to be quiet. I hadn't done yoga before. I was trying to like it. I'd heard so many people say they loved it with a passion. But so far, I didn't get it. We'd been here for ages, and all we seemed to be doing was lying down. Although the instructor didn't call it lying down, she called it a posture. Shavasana, she intoned as she passed me at a serene pace, toes spreading with each step. It means corpse pose. In the mirror, I could see the clock. We had been here only 10 minutes. How time drags when you're a corpse. But I'm not good with things that need to be done slowly. It must be the pianist's temperament. Pianos are percussion instruments. They can't give you long, swelling notes like strings or woodwind. You need to keep moving, keep the pulse. The instructor continued her slow tour. Think of nothing, she said, absolute nothing. The rhythm of her feet suggested a tempo and then the slow movement of Beethoven's Emperor Concerto. That moment when the orchestra goes quiet and the piano comes in with a languorous, meandering scale. No, that was a nothing. Try again. I looked at the white ceiling tiles and tried to be blank like they were. Ah, they weren't blank. They had a pattern, like they'd been designed to resemble something. What? Wood grain? Crazy paving? No, that wasn't nothing. The candle flames trembled. They knew, even if we didn't, that another train was passing. With somewhere to go. I studied the orange tongues, trying to pick up the iron beat drumming into the topsoil, the bedrock, the bricks that made this building, the boards of this wooden floor. For heaven's sake, was this all we were going to do? I'd expected yoga to be more enthralling, overwhelming, engulfing. The instructor reached the front of the room and folded into a cross-legged position between the candles. Feel your chakras aligning, she said. Feel your chi flowing through your meridians. Meridians? In the last few weeks, I'd had my stuffing searched inside out. They'd found arteries, veins, nerves, muscles, tendons, ligaments, joint capsules, synovial fluid, long bones and the hollows in their core, carpals, metacarpals, phalanges like witch talons. I'd been ultrasounded, CT'd, X-rayed, Y-rayed, Z-rayed. What they didn't find, however, was chakras, meridians, or chi.
Thank you, Lou. Roz Morris comes to us from the other side of the pond in London, unless you're on the other side of the pond with her. She's a very busy lady, and she is in no way new to the writing craft. She is a former journalist, and she has published close to a dozen novels, and many of those novels have been bestsellers. Her name isn't on those bestsellers because they were ghostwritten, but she does write under her name, and Nail Your Novel and My Memories of a Future Life are already flying off the shelves. Now I'd like to introduce a lady who has been hard at work to help all of us to get our novels nailed to the bookstore shelves. Roz, how are you?
Hey.
Hello there, Roz. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. How are you today?
I'd just like to say it's so exotic to hear my novel read in an American accent. Thank you, Lou.
It's a hybrid of South African and American, so it's a little odd. Hi, Roz.
Right.
Okay, Roz, why don't you start off by telling everybody a little bit about yourself and what inspired you to be a writer?
Well, a big question. You'll start with a big question. I suppose I've always been creative, and I've always loved words and playing with them and loved stories. And as a child, I was always reading and also watching TV programs and films that had great stories that really drew you in. And from that, it was completely natural to play with them myself. And spend long hours in my bedroom writing stories, and I suppose I never grew out of it. And what I think is so special about the written word is that you get such a close connection with the reader. I mean, I love films, as I said. I love music and drama and all these creative arts. But with books, it's such a personal connection that you have between the reader and the writer. I mean, I'm looking at my bookshelves at the moment. I'm sitting in my study. I'm surrounded by books. We don't have to decorate walls in our house. It's books everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of those books is a journey I've really enjoyed, and they've seemed like very personal experiences. So really, I write because I can't help it.
It's a lovely thing. I tell people that I don't write because I want to. I write because I have to.
That's it.
You know, the words have to get out somehow. I'm quite intrigued. In my memories of A Future Life, your main character, Carol, is a pianist.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly intrigued because I play piano myself, although I'm certainly nothing the talent that she had. But we were wondering, are there any similarities in talent and personality between you and Carol?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I've always loved music. I've always played with the piano. I won't say play it because, as you can see in the frontispiece for that book, I dabble. I can't even read music, but I love music as a form of expression. I was intrigued by getting into the mind of somebody who had managed to make it the sole thing they loved in life, the way they expressed themselves, and the way they lived, in fact. Because for Carol, it is the way she lives. And it is an extraordinary thing to be able to do, to play music to that level. And quite a physical feat, and also, you know, a real journey of the soul. So I very much wanted to write about somebody who did that. So similarities are, I suppose, that I can very easily empathize with somebody who does that and who wants to express themselves in that way and finds it very fulfilling. But there was a lot of research I had to do as well.
Yeah, and you know, that's something, just thinking about that I've never actually thought about myself. I think as writers, we tend to think of things and places and people from the writer's perspective and in terms of literary expressions. But I guess somebody who is, for instance, a concert pianist might look at things differently, might look at things from a musical perspective, the way that she was. She was describing things in musical terms, which I find quite fascinating.
Yes, and also I was going to say, in regards to your character, Roz, it, as you referred to, it took you a lot of research to do. In fact, a lot of us writers spend a lot of time doing research and developing our characters to a point where a lot of our readers may think we're actually in tune to whatever we're writing about. Sometimes we're not. We're actually Googling a lot of this stuff. And I would like to ask you, how long did it take you to write My Memories of a Future Life, and why did you decide to present it in 4 episodes?
Well, it took me a good few years because there was a lot of research I wanted to do, and I wanted to do justice to the music because music's so special. Everybody loves it. And I wanted to really understand the kind of life that the character would have had. I wanted to do justice to the idea, because the idea of the story, which is to go by hypnosis into a future incarnation, that was something I felt had a lot of depth to mine, and I wanted to make sure that I found the real core of it. So that took quite a while. It took me a few years to write it, but actually novels with that kind of depth do take a long time. They're very different from the kind of books that I've written, well, ghosting, which I've managed to ghostwrite novels in just a few months, because the story is very straightforward and it's quite easy to see where things should go. A novel like My Memories of Future Life is, although it has a strong story, there's a lot that happens, there would have been a lot of different ways to do it, and I had to find the right one, so that took quite a long time. And then I thought, when I was deciding how to present it, I thought, well, Dickens used to present his stories in a part work format, and mm-hmm. and people would enjoy the story and they'd come back for another episode. And okay. you see this today also in with series like Lost. They're really quite challenging fiction, but they always at their core try to keep the reader's heart hooked. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to write a story like that, and I wanted people to feel that sense of excitement about the story. And I thought, mm-hmm. really, ordeal by fire for it. I thought I would see if it worked by releasing it as part work. And mm-hmm. fortunately, people did seem to like it.
Yeah, it certainly is a very different kind of a story. Did you have any difficulties in shopping it to an agent or a publisher?
Well, it was interesting, and the difficulties that I had really are like a portrait of the state of the industry today. Agents and publishers who read it really liked it. They loved the concept. They loved what I'd done with it and what I was exploring, and the scale of the story that I was writing. But it's an unusual book, as you said, and for the market, for the way the market is at the moment, it's very, very difficult for publishers to sell unusual books like that mm-hmm. into bookstores. It slightly falls between genres. It may be science fiction. It may be a bit of contemporary fantasy. It may be suspense. It may be literary fiction. It could fit all those categories, but that makes it difficult for a bookseller to know exactly where to put it. And that, at the moment, is the way the publishing industry in the UK, anyway, is needing to market books. So they weren't, my agent wasn't able to find a home for it, even though I came pretty close. I had conversations with quite big publishers who were saying, could you make it more of a thriller and then we could sell it? I think, no, but the core mm-hmm. of the book is not that. It is its own kind of story. It's a journey of a soul. And to make it a thriller would cheapen it. I could write another mm-hmm. one, and that would be a thriller, but this one has to be what it is. And also, the market has changed quite a lot over the last few years. If I'd got this book out, say, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, there were still authors being launched with that kind of book, and now they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and also in regards to that, Roz, the challenge of being a writer and also being someone who wants their work published and out on that bookshelf in a major bookstore, I guess, is quite the challenge. And what advice would you give to other writers who may be in the early stages of their writing or publishing their first book, and how do you deal with editors who want to change the shape and feel of your work?
This is such a tricky question to answer. I'll answer the last part first. Editors or agents might also want to change the shape and feel of your work. It's difficult to know as a beginner whether they're right or not, because you might have brilliant raw material but not have learned yet what to do with it, and it's only experience that will tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you might be talking to an agent or editor who can see you could be more commercial, but your book might be perfectly good as it is, but the agent or editor might be saying, if you change what you do, you could become commercially successful. And you don't know which of those reasons they're suggesting changes. There are quite a few people who are very happy to take that kind of feedback and to go with it. It's not necessarily a bad thing. In the end, you have to decide what kind of writing contracts you want to get from the publisher, because they won't want just one book, they'll want another one very similar mm-hmm. afterwards. And you have to weigh up what you'd be happy doing. You might decide that if an agent or editor is saying, look, we'll work with you on this and then we'll bring it out, that that's the right thing for you at that stage. And just because you do one kind of book now doesn't mean you can't do other kinds of books later on, or you might Yeah, you might want to independently publish some books and have other books out under a mainstream imprint. There are lots of different ways to do it. It has to be such an individual decision. If you feel that the book would be ruined with the kind of editorial input that's being suggested, that's a different matter, and maybe you shouldn't do it. You could write another one and keep the more difficult one for yourself, or put it on the back burner and revisit it. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But there are many different ways to answer the question. Really, you have to go with your gut for what you feel happy with.
Yeah, as you say, it's a very personal thing, I think, to any writer. So I do agree with you on that. Are you a full-time writer, Roz?
Mostly full-time. I also freelance still as a journalist because it's nice to have variety. And sometimes if you sit at a desk making things up all day, it's actually quite nice to go and deal with the real world.
So you have done journalism. Have you done anything else apart from that?
Yes. Another thing I do actually, as well as journalism and writing, is I edit novels for people. I used to edit for a literary consultancy in London. What they do is they would have novel manuscripts by people who showed quite a bit of promise as authors, and then they'd send them to people like me, and I would mentor them and teach them how to make their writing better, how to do what they wanted with the novel. And I now do that freelance as well. It's very rewarding, in fact, because when you help somebody to be the novelist they want to be, write the book they wanted to write, it's a very rewarding partnership.
I think that's a lovely thing. I haven't done much of that. I have done a lot of proofreading for friends, and that's very rewarding too, is just to give them something that's maybe a little better than they had when they sent it out to me.
Yes.
You know, just one more step along that road, and I think, as you say, it is very rewarding, and I love doing that too.
Yeah, you've obviously got an eye for detail then.
I like to think that I do. I'm a little bit of a perfectionist when it comes to my own writing. And I do pick up on things, and, you know, the grammar is always pretty much spot on. There are no typos. So I'm probably a good person to have as a proofreader.
Yeah. And there are some people for whom that's just automatic. I'm quite lucky that because I've done so much work in publishing that I'm used to all that mistake spotting and so on. Now, you'll probably find a typo in that book, but I very much hope you don't.
Yeah. I don't think we found any in, or at least I didn't find any in the first episode that I read from the Future Life book there that you wrote. It really read well, and it flowed very nicely, and I'm going to finish the rest of the book here in the short near future.
Excellent.
Yes.
Not the distant future.
And, Roz, as you know, we're doing today the review of both your books, My Memories of a Future Life, and also Nail Your Novel, which is a book that you help other writers, help their craft. And, excuse me, got a little bit of a scratchy throat today. And what I'd like to explain here to everybody is that this show is being broadcast in December, and with that I would like to wish Roz a very Merry Christmas. We got a couple more weeks to go before that special day. Christmas greetings to everybody out there. And also, in saying that, I'd also like to say that I attended a webinar that Roz and another writer put on back in November, and it's called How to Write a Novel. It's a webinar series with Roz Morris and Joanna Penn. I hope I pronounced that name correct. But they presented a webinar. And I guess, being that this is a recorded program, I guess My Memories of a Future Webinar would be appropriate at this point. So I haven't gotten there yet, but when this is broadcast, I have, and I'm sure I loved it. So thank you for doing that. And I'd like to ask you, do you have any other plans for the future for anything similar to the webinar that was on here just a few weeks ago?
Well, Joanna and I are looking at what else we can do to help writers. We go together very well, actually, because she wrote her first novel and published it in 2011. We've got a bit left of this year, haven't we? And I have been doing it for years, and so she comes from one end of the expertise spectrum, and I come from the other end. And it was great fun doing the webinar, and we'll probably do quite a few others when we find out what else readers need, really. Writers and listeners to her show, because she's got a very good podcast, which I listen to every week. It's mm-hmm. book marketing, different kinds of writing, different ways of organizing your writing, different ways of getting your mm-hmm. books finished, and all kinds of helpful advice. And she's got this great show, and I really recommend it.
Yes, I actually met Joanna on Twitter. She's on my Twitter friends list.
Right.
No, I
remember the creative pen. I do remember that. I don't spend much time on Twitter, and I really need to get back there. But I always enjoyed what she had to say. It was very, very instructive, and she seems like a great person.
Yeah, well, actually, she has now moved so that she lives about 10 minutes walk away from me.
Oh, well, that must make it a lot easier for you both.
Yes, well, it's very funny because I listen to her podcasts when I go for a run, and I'd be running around the common near where I live, and I'd have her in my ears, and then I found out that she was moving to just a few streets away, and you know, that could have been, because I know what she looks like from having talked to her over the web mm-hmm. on Skype and everything, and it would have been so funny if I'd met her one day while I was listening to one of her shows.
That would have been. You know, the characters that we create for our stories, like you did with Carol, this is something, you know, we often ask, but do you have more of a tendency to control your characters' lives, or do you find that sometimes your characters kind of tend to take over your life?
Well, I think they develop wills of their own, and a particular case in point is Jean, who you must have met by now if you've got to the end of episode one of Future Life.
Yes.
The hypnotist. He was really quite stubborn to deal with.
Oh, that's interesting.
As the writer, there were a lot of things. I did a lot of experimenting to see what the characters would do, and if I wanted to get I couldn't get him to do anything. He had to do what he had to do. So he was definitely in control of himself in that book.
Yeah.
And Jerry was also, he would just put his foot down, refuse to do things, or just come out and do something that would surprise me. I suppose Carol was more controllable because I already had an idea of where she was going to go, but that was because I drew her first, really, so
mm-hmm.
I knew where she was going to have to go, and she did surprise me, of course, in several ways, but definitely those two male characters, Jerry and Jean, were they were people unto themselves, really.
I think that's something that the listeners would be interested to hear, because, you know, I always used to think that the writer controlled everything until I actually started seriously writing myself and discovered that that was not the case.
Mm.
So I think from a listener's point of view, I think that would be quite a fascinating aspect to, you know, to the craft of writing.
Right.
Yes, and there are a few peripheral characters as well who you could push them in certain ways but not in other ways, or they just come out and surprise you and say, I'm doing this. What do you think of that?
Have you ever had a character just pop into a story that you had not planned for?
There have definitely been characters who have popped up and have just become so much more important than I
mm-hmm.
thought they would be.
Mm-hmm.
Because it turned out they had a lot more to do, and I would just have planned them as almost a walk on, and then they sort of stick around in the scene for a bit longer, and before I know it, they've become really important.
Uh huh.
Yeah. And in regards to that, Roz, in Nail Your Novel, you talk about developing a system to resurrect the unfinished novel. Can you tell us a little about the system and how it helps those of us in the early stages of novel writing? Now, you mentioned in that book the hat game, the card game, and you talked a lot about the inner critic. And I'd be interested in your view regarding, you know, how the characters develop and how you deal with these characters that kind of pop into the story.
Well, what I find is the reason that people abandon novels is they lose control over what's going on. Either it gets too much, they have too many ideas, it's going in too many sprawling directions, and they can't keep a hold where the story is, or they run out of ideas. So it's either too much going on or nothing going on. And what I did with that book was I developed ways to just get the book started again or bring it back under control. The hat game, which you mentioned, is a way of organizing all your ideas, but keeping control of them. Basically, you get something like a hat, or as I say in that book, I didn't have a top hat to hand, which would be nice. So I used this rather fancy box that some lovely French plates came in, and I just wrote all the ideas I'd got for a book on little pieces of paper and put them into the box. And once I'd got them all, I then took them out and looked at them all to see how I could fit them together and see if some were duplications of each other, see if some were improvements on each other. Sometimes you have an idea, forget you had it, but write a better version of it. And from that, you can see all the ideas that you're putting into a book. Very often, what people do is make lists of their ideas, and I find that is not as creative as actually just messing them around on lots of bits of paper and looking at them.
Uh-huh.
Rather like a mind mapping exercise. A lot of people talk about mind mapping. But if you make a list, you've already fixed a kind of hierarchy of what's important and what isn't. And you forget what's on the beginning of the list by the time you've got to the end, especially if you're adding to it all the time.
Uh-huh.
So the hat game is a more creative way of using your ideas. And you can take an abandoned manuscript and look through all the ideas you've got in it, write on little pieces of paper, throw them into this hat, and then you can see what they all are and where you can start to make sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the card game is a more organized version of that. What I would tend to do is, once I've got all my hat things, I'll start making actual story events out of them. So if you've got, say, a lost dog, I might think, okay, what I now need is the lost dog to be in a scene in the book. So I would look at the various things I'd have, so the characters I'd got, situations they were in, and say, have somebody out jogging who this dog comes up to and starts following home, and that might kick off another event. So I could write a series of events on cards, which were taken from the ideas in Hatbox, but actually made into events like storyboarding a movie, and deciding what would actually be stages of the story, things that could happen. And again, if they're cards, you can move them around. So you might have the man meeting, who's out jogging, meeting the dog at the beginning of the story, or it might be at the end. In each place, it could do a different job, or it might be the way he gets to meet somebody. It might be the way he hears that somebody is all right because he sees their dog is running around, and that's a nice end to the story. Who knows? But all these things allow you to examine your material and find the best way to use it for your story.
It sort of also, I think, it helps to jumpstart your imagination.
Yes.
Do that because, for instance, like with the dog and the person jogging, you could plug that dog into another scene where somebody is, I don't know, reading a book or dancing or, you know, climbing a mountain or whatever. And I think it's kind of interesting to see what comes of that.
Yes, Yes, and you can also see at a glance what you have, because with the cards game, you don't get bogged down in detail. What I do is I tell people to take small index cards
mm-hmm.
and a fat marker pen, and you can't write very much with that.
Yes.
So what you do is you get simplicity and clarity for what you're going to have in the story. Most writers, again, get too bogged down in the detail. They can see too much that could happen, but they can't see the core of what they need to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
Again, what I do is I aim to give people clarity and therefore control over where their story is going to go, who is going to do what, what's going to come in when, what that's going to mean, and what kind of what other events, as you say, that will suggest. And then, as you say, you can have the dog trotting through other scenes, or you could have it bite someone, and that could cause a real fuss. You can do anything, but what you have to have is a real grasp of what's going on in the story. And again, most of the time when people abandon a book, it's because they lost that control.
Right. And I also know that when you're involved in writing a novel, such as I am, when you're 68,000 words into it out of a 100,000-word novel, and you are in your first draft, as you mentioned in your book, you sort of suggested that maybe the writer should allow the book to flow like something of more of a dream would flow, than trying to pay a lot of attention to details during that first write, and then wait to fill in the details and give it more flavor, if you will, later on when you do a rewrite. I was wondering what you thought about maybe adding to that idea. Is it correct in what I'm saying?
Well, what I feel is that writing the first draft is the first time you really live the story. Up until then, it would have been various stages of planning. Some people don't like to plan very much. I like to plan quite a lot because I like my novels to be very structured, and they tend to work better as stories if they're structured. But when you're doing all that planning, it's an overview. You're not really as involved as you are in later stages. But when you write the first draft, that's when you start living the story moment by moment and breath by breath. And it's easy to start judging what you're writing when actually what you need to do is see what flows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I describe it as like a state of guided dreaming. And what I encourage people to do is to forget about whether they think it sounds right or even whether the spelling's right, but just to imagine and write.
Mm-hmm.
And later you can do lots of tidying up, and there will be lots of tidying up that needs to be done. And as you say, it's not always taking things out. You may have written too much, but you may have written too much of not quite the right kind of thing. You may have to add details. You may have to do some research and add some really sensible, rock-solid details of what it's like to, say, climb a rock face. But the first draft is very much you sort of take your inhibitions away and write and live the story, and then come back after a period and see what you have, and then start editing, revising,
mm-hmm.
and see what else you need. But it's crucial to have the stage of real immersion, because that's where you get the most vivid writing. That's where you start to, and you've heard writers talking about showing instead of telling.
Mm-hmm.
And showing is when you make the reader live the story, really. And telling is when you're describing it from a distance point of view. So you might say, he felt frightened. But if I was writing the paragraph in which he felt frightened, I would describe how his mouth went dry, how he suddenly mm-hmm. became aware he was clenching his fists. Those details that show what it feels like. And those only come out when you can just let go and really immerse.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm not a very structured writer myself. I do like to write a synopsis first, And then I just start writing, and I write down the story, and I go back later on, and I flesh out those bare bones. And you know, it might not be everybody's style, but that's the way that I do things, and you know, that's pretty much what I enjoy. Curious to know what you do for fun. You obviously do a lot of writing. What does Rosmaris do for fun?
Well, probably far too many things. I'm quite active, and I'm quite a hooligan. I like quite vigorous.
You like to jog too, right, Roz?
Yeah, I like to jog. I don't actually jog terribly fast. That's probably the one thing that I do that's quite sedate. But I love exercise, which I mean, if I told myself that at school, I'd be very surprised to hear myself saying that, because I hated it when I was at school. But I love things like vigorous circuit training, and I had to go at martial arts classes for a while, but I got a bit bored of them. But now what I do is I dance. I love dancing.
Oh.
And yeah, I don't do it terribly well, because another thing I do is horse riding, and because of years of horse riding, my legs bend in the shape of the outside of a horse. I don't actually look like a dancer when I dance. I look like a bit like a cowboy sometimes, and a bit like a martial artist at other times, because of the martial arts stuff that I've done. But for some styles of dance, like street, it works quite well. Anyway, I don't mind what I look like. I just really enjoy moving to music.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And that brings in your love of music again.
Oh, it does, yes. It's really music rules me.
Absolutely. Roz, we got a couple more questions for you, but I would like to find out from you. I know there's a lot of listeners out there who'd like some advice, many of whom are first-time indie writers and authors. What should they keep in mind when they're deciding to look for an agent, editor, or a publisher, or what are the benefits of maybe going the self-publishing route?
Well, if you're looking for an agent or editor or publisher, first of all, don't query your book too soon. A lot of people think, because they spent maybe a year writing it, and especially if it's their first book, they think, oh, it must be ready to send out by now, because I've done quite a lot to it, and it's a lot better than it was when it started. And that's absolutely true. It probably is. It undoubtedly is, because during that time you have practiced quite a bit and refined the story quite a bit. But there's a lot to learn. Writing a novel is a huge job that you have to learn, not just how to write your book, but all sorts of craft considerations that you may not have got to grips with. So what you should do before you send it to anybody in the industry is find someone who will give you an honest opinion of whether it's ready to send out yet, or whether you need to learn a bit more, read some books, that's good, but nothing really will replace the eye of somebody who is a little more experienced in writing. It really helps to get another point of view on what you've done. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to pay for an editor like me. Some people choose to do that, but there are also quite a lot of ways to get that kind of feedback for free. You can now, with the wonders of social media, you can probably find somebody who reads the same kind of thing that you write, or writes the same kind of thing as well, and strike up a good creative partnership, and get sort of respectful and useful criticism. So before you actually launch the book into the publishing industry, or even publish it yourself, do try to get some good quality feedback on whether it's good enough. Then when you're looking for an agent or an editor, there's a huge range of genres that these people work in. You have to target them correctly. So if what you're writing is women's fiction, then look for agents who specialize in that. There will be a lot of them, and they will say that they will list what kinds of books they're looking for. That is something that doesn't occur to people to start with. They just think any agent is good. but it's not. You've got to find the right agent for you. And same with publishers. And there are a lot of small independent publishers now that deal with specific areas. So you could get quite a long way talking to them directly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think that's where social media comes in so handily, is that it makes us so much more available, or makes those people so much more available to us. Anything from a beta reader to getting a critique partner, and just to explain a little about that, it's, you know, beta readers are somebody who's not necessarily writers themselves, but they will give you an honest opinion of your book, the storyline, the flow, the content, do a little proofreading maybe. Critique partner is somebody that you work with who probably is also a writer, or at least in the business, who then again will read your work, give you an honest opinion of what they think. And then it does put you in touch with agencies. Sure. I've come across a lot of people. There are writers groups out there that are happy to help. And how has social media affected you with your writing?
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. it's a terrific way of, as you say, meeting like-minded people who you wouldn't have the chance to meet at all without it. It's incredible that the people we can make connections with now, who share our reading tastes, share our writing tastes. I've become good friends with a lot of people through reading their blogs and liking what they say, and meeting them on Facebook and Twitter. It's wonderful. It's in the old days, what you used to have to do was go to publishers' parties to meet people who were all writing groups, to meet people who were also doing the same kind of thing as you, and the chances that they were writing the same kind of thing, that they were a very good match for you, were very small. But now, because there are so many of us out there, we can all find people who can be very good writing friends, and you know, and more as well. So I love it.
Very good. Raza, that's just about ready to wrap up our show today with you. It's been a pleasure having you on. Where can our listeners reach you in your books if they need to?
I used to have one blog, which is, and it still is, called Nail Your Novel, www.nailyournovel.com. I'm also on Twitter, tweeting writing advice as Dirty White Candy.
I had another question. What's that all about?
That is, it sounds quite risque, but actually, it's an 18th century sweetmeat, which was sold by, have you heard of Fortnum and Mason?
I haven't.
Yes, I have.
Oh, she has.
Yes. Fortnum and Mason, it's a food emporium in Piccadilly, and they're still going today. They sell absolutely wonderful food, usually at the very high end.
Very best.
Yeah, very expensive, and very good as well. But it's a real prestige brand, and in the 18th century, when they were opening, one of the first products they sold was something called Dirty White Candy. And when I read that, I thought, that's extraordinary, because it sounds modern.
It does.
It does. And I could just imagine, it gave me a flash of someone like Dr. Johnson, Samuel Johnson, enjoying a bit of Dirty White Candy. And that's, you know how you get those moments where you really connect with a character, and you know, stories try to do this all the time, like the beginning of the film Gladiator, when you see a hand trailing along some stalks of corn, and it makes you think, this character's just like me, I can imagine doing that. That Dirty White Candy detail made me think, something like that connects you with people, no matter how long ago they lived, they're just like us. And it felt for me like a manifesto for writing and good storytelling. It also takes quite a long time to explain.
Very good. Very good.
But I loved it, and in fact, other people seem to quite like it too. It's quite cheeky, but it does actually have an impeccable pedigree.
Uh-huh. I just love that term too. Cheeky is always been a favorite of mine. I know my wife uses it every now and then, but it's something that us Americans don't hear much of, and when they say it, you wonder, what do they mean by cheeky?
I was raised in South Africa, so, you know, we speak British English there.
Do you also use the word chuff?
Are you saying a big word?
Well, I use it a lot because it's quite an English word. But every time I use it on Facebook or Twitter, because the majority of people I'm in contact with are Americans, they say chuff. What does that mean?
We use chuffed all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm so chuffed.
People
don't know what you're talking about.
I have no idea what that means.
It means pleased. It means pleased about something. You say you're chuffed about something.
I would have no idea if somebody said that to me. It would sound negative. It doesn't sound pleasing at all. It sounds like, well, I won't go into it. But anyways, Roz, it's been a pleasure having you on the program, and we look forward to you. And I will see you in the future in the webinar. So I really enjoyed that, by the way. And we'll talk to you again. We'll see you around Facebook. Thanks for joining us.
Great questions in the webinar.
Okay. Take care, Roz.
Andy, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Roz. Take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there you go, Roz Morris once again, and we really appreciated her interview on, I believe it was October 23rd that we did that interview. That brings us to the end of today's program. I thank you very much for tuning in. I hope you will tune in next week when we have Christmas Terror Tales will be on next week. Hopefully, if we can round up the author in time to get him on. And until then, good writing and good reading, or vice versa. Have a good week.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in.